and Hoop, here we are, three strong today for the audio choke here at MMATorch.com. Leave a comment, find us on Facebook and Twitter, Audio Choke. As always,
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. So let's just dive headfirst into whatever we want to talk about. What do we want to talk about?
A week and a half old WEC event?
No!
No.
I don't want to talk about that.
Dominic Cruz won. It was good.
Yay!
That was cool.
Yay. I like Dominic. He seems like a good guy.
Yeah, it was a close fight. I think closer than people expected after, because it was a rematch with Joseph Benavidez. And that first fight, Cruz didn't really have problems with the takedowns or anything like that. And it was a much closer affair this time out. And that's maybe all I want to say about it, because by the time this podcast gets up, it'll probably be like a week and a half old event.
So yeah.
Another solid outing from WEC that probably no one watched.
I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I was in the boonies at the time.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess, I don't know if it was an article up on Bloody Elbow or something I saw earlier, but basically someone pointed out that despite the fact that the WEC is like, you know, the UFC's little brother or little sister, whatever, however you like to assign your gender roles.
I would say brother.
And, you know, it's under the Zuff umbrella. It hasn't really grown much with viewership. I guess the Cruz-Benavidez rematch, WEC lost viewers off of its last outing or something like that.
Hmm.
And basically, any show that doesn't have Uriah Faber on it just doesn't do that well on Versus for free. So it was someone kind of bemoaning that. But I mean, you know, WC puts on good fights. They're usually pretty solid. Just
I would wonder how the ratings were for the UFC on Versus. I never really saw a whole lot of numbers on that and how they would compare to the WEC's. Because I'm wondering if this... I'm sure the UFC probably gets better ratings on Versus than WEC does just because it's got the UFC name to it. But I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of it has to do with just the fact that Versus is still, you know, despite the fact that they're trying to step up their game as a TV channel, is still not like, you know, one of the channels that everyone has and watches.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I certainly think it's on the basic cable package. But, yeah, I mean, among your options of sports channels, I don't think Versus is up there yet. I mean,
yeah,
they were still promoting lots of hunting and fishing shows, like, during the WEC. And you know, people who are into hunting and fishing, that's great. But, like, I don't think that's not a broad audience.
No. And there's probably not a whole hell of a lot of crossover between the two. I mean, there's some. Clearly, that, you know, there's a number of fighters. Like, Matt Hughes is probably out hunting right now.
Tim Sylvia, yeah.
Yeah.
They hunt together, I think.
Oh, that's cool. It's good that they still hang out. I think Brock Lesnar likes to. But, you know, I wouldn't think that a whole lot of people at the hardcore hunting events, hardcore enough to watch other people hunt, are, you know, really into the fights. But also, I mean, UFC practically owns Spike TV right now. And, you know, they've got commercials for UFC events all the time. It's impossible to watch Spike TV and not know the next upcoming UFC event, whether it's a UFC on Spike TV or it's a UFC pay-per-view. And I think that really helps them. You can watch Versus and, you know, there will be the WEC commercials all the time. But for most people, you're probably not watching Versus unless you're watching the WEC. So they probably get a lot less advertisement in that aspect as well.
Yeah. I was able to pull up an MMA Junkie article that with the ratings for the WEC 50 event, and it was looks like about 316,000, which is around average, but kind of on the lower end. 49 drew 324,000 viewers. So, I mean, at least they're holding steady, I guess-ish. You know, they have like a set group of people who are always going to watch the WEC events. But, I mean, WEC has been under Zuffa's umbrella for several years now, right? I mean,
yeah, it's been since like 2007, I think.
So, I mean, it's definitely one thing to be said for having, you know, a show that has steady viewership, but, you know, I would imagine they're trying to grow their ratings. And I know the Versus, the UFC on Versus cards haven't done, like, amazing numbers, but I think they've both been decent.
Yeah. Well, they've also probably had a lot more advertising to them, once again, just because... you know, it's got the UFC juggernaut advertising stuff. Even if it's on another channel, you know, it's still UFC is advertising something. While WEC, I don't think gets really any advertisement outside of Versus.
Mm.
So, I mean, that probably helped also. And, you know, they had a fairly large name in John Jones as the main event for both the UFC on Versus events. And you mentioned that Uriah Faber is always a good draw. And he's, you know, at this point, kind of WEC's Chuck Liddell, where he's a former star, you know, still a big name, but not on the elite level anymore.
Right.
But, you know, is still the most famous, the most popular guy. But they've had a lot of shakeup.
He's in half the commercials on Versus at this point.
Yeah. But they've had a lot of shakeup in terms of championship people. I could see, you know, if Dominic Cruz gets a good run, you know, he's a, you know, nice-looking guy with a, you know, big smile. I could see him, you know, potentially being a very popular champion if he can hold on to it. I don't know so much about Jose Aldo because he could very possibly kind of get fall into the Anderson Silva mold where you can be a very exciting, very dominant fighter, but be a Brazilian and then not be super popular as a result of it.
You're saying he secretly speaks English?
I don't know. He might blatantly speak English as far as I know. I don't really remember if he has a translator or not.
Yeah. All right. So good WEC talk, but more recently... And Matt, I don't know if you caught WEC like a week and a half ago or whenever it was.
I didn't. I've actually been pretty pretty clueless on all of the mixed martial arts haps, and that's why I'm shutting up.
You've been in a drug-induced coma. I got you.
Yeah, rock and roll!
You know what helped perk you up?
Huh?
Some O2 in a can.
You know what? Why? I mean, that's awful. How dare you, sir?
Yeah, just perk you right up. Help you breathe better.
Yeah, some oxygen. Just let me snort some of that stuff.
I don't think you snort it.
Well, I don't see why not.
I think you give it a little spritz in the mouth, maybe. I don't
know. How about in the nose?
Why not? Maybe we'll see.
I breathe through the nose all the time.
But that's a bit of a reference to the most recent Strike Force card, Strike Force Houston.
Racked with controversy.
Guess where it took place.
Yeah. This would be exhibit, I don't know, at least B or C of why MMA organizers might not want to hold competitions in Texas right now.
Texas sucks!
Yeah, there's some iffy stuff going on. In reference to the O2 in a can thing, I mean, it sounds like, for people who aren't aware, Saturday's Strike Force event in Houston, there was KJ Nunes and Mo LaWall were both had in their corners. Their cornermen had basically it looked like oxygen in a can breathers for them that they gave them before the fight, you know, just take a swig of oxygen. I don't know. Swig's obviously not the right word.
A puff, perhaps?
A puff of oxygen, and they might have done it between rounds. Maybe, maybe not.
Well, you know, I breathe oxygen all the time.
Right. But it's the compressed oxygen, pure, like, you know, the good kind Michael Jackson used to get in his, like...
Yeah, the kind that clears you up after a hangover.
Something like that. You know, the magical healing properties of pure oxygen. But it was oxygen in a can, and the questions had been raised initially online, like, is that legal? We didn't think you could do that. And it's legal in Texas, is what's been determined. The Texas, I don't even know if I can call them an athletic commission.
Well, they're not necessarily
Department
a good
of Licensing
one.
And Regulation.
Ooh.
It said it was legal. It sounds like it was approved by the commission or whatever. So even though it might not be approved in certain states under MMA rules, it got the okay from Texas, according to them. So, you know. Controversy avoided, I guess.
Did they even really think about it beforehand, though? I mean, was it something that was allowed or just lack of rules allowed it to happen?
Well, there's a pretty standard set of rules as a general, you know, rule.
It's not included in the things that are allowed in the ring, but it wasn't specifically banned.
Hmm.
But basically what... sorry to cut you off. Go ahead, Greg, and I'll
follow up. Well, I was just thinking, like, the fact that two different fighters, who, as far as I know, like, don't train together at all, both did it at the same time. Like, you don't generally see guys blatantly cheating with stuff, and if they do, it's usually like a one-person incident, like with the accusations that George St. Pierre was greasy in a while back. He was the only guy who was, you know, there with Vaseline having been rubbed on his back. There was nobody else doing that. So for two guys to blatantly just be like, yeah, I got this oxygen can, strikes me as being odd that, you know, people would even think to try and get away with that before Texas came out and said, yeah, that's fine.
Right. So, and it sounds like, I'm looking at an MMA Junkie article. They contacted the And it's important to note it's not like a state athletic commission. It's the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, which oversees the combat sports program. So even that's just a little more different than what people are used to in, like, you know, more, you know, like a New Jersey or a Nevada athletic commission.
Or everywhere.
Right. But let's see. I'm trying to dig up the exact quote here. Let's see. Sorry, bear with me. Susan Stanford, according to MMA Junkie, the public information officer for the Department of Licensing and Regulation. My understanding that the physician did consult with the ringside physician, and the cans of O2 were approved by the physician. It was within the rules. So.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's great that they can do something completely different than what everybody else does. Well, and go states' rights, I say.
Well, yeah, and now it comes down to, like, the MMA blogosphere or whatever. Like, well, are they saying that just to cover their own asses? Did they really approve it before? Or are they just saying that they approved it, you know, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, there's enough crazy stuff going on in MMA that, like, we don't need to generate. Like, I don't feel we need to, like...
I think there's other problems with this Strike Force Houston that need more immediate attention than two guys just having oxygen tanks, which is a little...
Like, if they're going to do it, everyone should do it.
Yeah.
Like, and like, it seems kind of silly, because last week, I know you weren't here, Greg, but we had the whole, like, steroids conversation, what with the allegations against having Shane Carwin on that distribution list of a doctor who distributed steroids.
Yeah, because clearly Shane Carwin was doing a whole bunch of steroids. Why else would he be on the list?
Maybe they were for a friend.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Maybe it was for a college
He was
project?
Getting them and then dumping them right down the toilet.
Vigilante drug destruction. But it would seem kind of silly for us to come on here, like, a week after having the steroid conversation. And I think we're all kind of, like, opposed, like, hey, it's not allowed in MMA, so it's bad. But overall, I think we're all kind of like, also, I wouldn't have a huge problem if everyone in MMA did steroids and they were regulated. So it'd be kind of silly for me to come on in this and be like, guys, we're doing oxygen!
That's outrageous. Awful!
Like, it's weird and we haven't seen it before.
That's a black eye on the sport!
Right. And it was like, yeah, it was a little sketchy when it first came up, but, you know, what are you going to do? You know,
if it's allowed, it's allowed. If it's in the rules, I mean, if you know, somebody saw King Mo's Rider and it said oxygen tank, I'm like, I want one of those too! You know, maybe that's what happened. And...
Yeah, so, you know, whether we'll see that again or not, who knows? I mean, and the oxygen tanks are common in a lot of other sports, you know, as well. They're not on a banned, the pure oxygen tanks, I don't think, are on any banned substance lists anymore.
Although, I think it kind of makes you look like a wuss in a fight. If, like, you know, between rounds, like, man... I need me some oxygen.
You know, is Texas low elevation? Who knows? High elevation. It's not. No.
No, not at all.
There's certainly a lot of higher places that people have fought.
But if you, you know, have that plastic nose tube deal that the cancer patients, you know, have for, you know, breathing apparatus eye, then, you know, you don't look all that badass.
Right. And giving a lot of shout-outs to MMA Junkie, but they have their weekly Ask the Doctor segment, a doctor who's also an MMA fan, and the...
What'd he say?
Well, see, ask the fight doc. What did Strike Force fighters spray into their mouths? And
they were spraying into their mouths? So it wasn't...
Right, it was like...
Yeah, it was like in a can.
Oh, you know, I see, an inhaler.
It's not like what you'd expect, like, to see, like, in a, you know, like a... Like,
I was describing something completely different.
Right, like, because I think a lot of people think of the oxygen tank, like, you see on, like, during a football game or something like that, where guys, like, put on the mask and are breathing out of that. This was like, there's like a compressed air kind of can, like an inhaler. But this whole thing was like, hey, what were they putting in their mouth? Blah 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 blah.
And it was
O2. But one of the take home points from that is, like, there had been some studies done that apparently said there's no significant benefit of doing that. So people concerned about an unfair advantage. There's that for you. If
he just wanted some pina colada in his mouth.
I don't know if it was scented oxygen or not. Who knows? Maybe he just needed that a little kick.
Yeah, well, it only worked for one of them anyway. Because of the fighters who, you know, went in there, there was one and one, which is the average anyway, 50%.
So, listeners, if you want to be angry about it, be angry about it. But I can complain about the reffing all day. So we'll get to that.
I'll continue to be angry about it.
Yeah, I don't need to complain about compressed oxygen.
But how about that reffing?
Oh, my goodness.
How bad is that John, whatever his name
John
is?
John Shorley? Yeah.
He sucks.
There's a lot of, like, famous kind of MMA refs, and usually they're famous because, like, they do, like, cool hand signals before their fight or because they've just been around forever, like, you know, Big John McCarthy or Herb Dean.
Herb Dean does the salute. That's
MMA fans, if you hear the name John Shorley, run away is what you should do. if he's reffing an MMA event, or even I think he's a boxing ref as well, but he has a pretty bad track record, and I know Sherdog Jordan Breen has done a pretty good extensive look into how terrible he is as a ref, and he struck again on Strikeforce Houston's card.
Which fights did he officiate on this card?
The noticeable one was the Bobby Lashley Chad Griggs fight, which we should mention. Bobby Lashley lost, kind of an upset, but I think it's just one of those things. I think it'll help bring people's minds, but kind of back to earth about Bobby Lashley and where he is in the sport. He was a guy who had 5 or 6 professional fights against substandard competition.
His best competition so far had been Wes Sims.
Right, a fat, out-of-shape Wes Sims.
Who took the fight on 4 days' notice.
Yeah, but Bobby Lashley had the name value. He was another former WWE superstar coming into MMA. He's going to be as good as Brock Lesnar,
yeah.
Right?
Well, it worked really well for the first one.
Right. But, Lightning did not strike again, and he lost to a guy who's hasn't fought in a while. So I think a lot of the hype will come off of Bobby Lashley, and now we'll see if he has what it takes to do the rebound, all of that. But he lost after getting stood up from the mount.
Well, now I didn't see the fight, but that's not going to stop me from commenting on it.
Not at all.
Was he doing anything from the mount at this point?
I think there's some pity patting going on.
Yeah, was he, doing anything significant from that?
He was not Donkey Konging him.
Well, I mean, was he hurting him at all?
I don't know. And I think we'll obviously get into different opinions here.
Because I've seen Ricardo Arona get stood up from the mount as well. I was like, just because you're in an extremely dominant position doesn't mean you're not stalling.
Right, and I guess I'm kind of the mind, and it's not, but especially when you're in an extremely dominant position, you've earned that position, and whether you're being successful with it or not, there's always going to be exceptions, but I'm kind of against refs standing up a fight. I know it's boring, and I know it's not fun to watch, but I mean, the guy earned that position. If you don't want to be on your back fighting the guy who's trying to grind you out, learn how to stop the takedown and learn how to stand up. And again, there's going to be exceptions, maybe if you're just in his guard and not doing anything. But he was in mount. So,
yeah.
But again, he was not, throwing, deathly Donkey Kong punches to him. So, and there's nothing in the, the unified rules about, when a ref's supposed to stand up when he's not supposed to stand
now,
up.
Now, I also read that they stood it up initially to check on a cut.
That was kind of weird. Lashley had a cut over under his
eye,
first of all. And there had been a cut that had been there at the end of the first round, and I guess his corner didn't do a very good job of, doing anything with it. I saw it, and it looked bad, and his eye itself was kind of red and bloodshot. I'm like, oh, that's kind of a bad-looking cut, but it's under his eye, so it shouldn't be a problem. But then, it got, obviously, in the second round, they went almost, the last 30 seconds or so, it was bleeding again, that sort of thing. So there was a stand-up from the mount, and the cut was checked. And it was never made entirely clear if he was standing them up specifically to check the cut or if he was stood them up and it was like, oh, also we should check the cut. But if you're standing someone up to check a cut, you're supposed to ask them if they want the position back, I believe.
And now is that in the unified? I mean, I know that was part of the controversy.
Well,
is
I don't
not
know that
the
they
option.
Necessarily have to ask. I remember just a very recent UFC, I think it was Herb Dean, asked a fighter if he wanted his dominant position back, and he said yes. And Joe Rogan, remarked about that. Whoa, I've never seen them actually, ask. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's in the rules, and they're supposed to, and they never do. Or maybe they're supposed to put them back down on the ground, because that happens a lot. But it's not always necessarily placed back where it was. My kind of idea on the stand-up, though, and this is going to be kind of a tangent.
Right.
But I think the stand-up should be based on who's the person stalling. So if I got a person in my guard, I'm lying on my back, mm-hmm. I can clamp you down. You're not going to do anything.
Right.
The person on bottom can stall, too. And I think that person should, stay down there the entire round if that's what they want to do. You should never get a stand-up just because you clamp down. That's the one that Krokop and Vanderlei Silva kind of did a lot in Pride. They get a yellow card out of the deal, but then they get stood back up. But in my opinion, if you get taken down, and you're just going to, like, hold on until they stand you back up,
mm-hmm.
you should, you know, just lose the fight, basically. Get up yourself. But if the guy on top is going to be the one stalling, if he's going to just take you down and then just kind of, like, you know, not pass your guard and not do anything, and, you know, maybe even from side mount if he's just not going to do anything from there, then that's when the stand-ups, I think, should occur. Mm-hmm. It's I think it should be based on who is the person stalling, although, in theory, both of them could stall, I guess.
Right.
But that's pretty unusual.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, I think there's always going to be exceptions for, like, when you feel a fight should be stood up. But, like, I'm sure I've seen fights stood up from the mount before, but it was just bizarre. Like, you normally don't see that. And the thing that also struck me, and I know they get a lot of grief already, but the Strikeforce commentators, like, that would be an instance where I would expect Marwan Nalo to, like, freak out and it'd be justified. Because, like, you know, he talks in his over-the-top booming, like, presentator,
yes.
You know, presenting voice. And, like, I don't really think they said much of anything about it, which was weird. The point is, it was towards the end of the second round, and Bobby Lashley was clearly gassed, so who knows if he would have lost anyways. But he got stood up from the mount, and they had the cut check, everything like that, and they resumed the fight standing, and, you know, he loses.
Yeah, like, instantly.
Can't get a takedown. He's, clearly gassed. Work for that takedown, can't get it, kind of like crash. A similar ending to the main event, but, you know, with different... you know, different lead up, but, you know, kind of clasping onto the one leg, trying to get a take, you know, like desperately clinging for the single leg takedown and just getting pounded on the head, maybe a few times on the back of the head, which would be another thing you would hope the ref would say something about.
You would hope so.
Yeah, and so he ends up losing to Chad Griggs, which big upset. And then, of course, they tried to make the comparison. Like, well, you know, this is the same place where GSP lost to Matt Serra. I'm like, yeah, totally, totally the same type of upset. Yeah. But, yeah, so it was surprising because, I mean, you know, I think when we were previewing the show, you know, I wanted to give Chad Griggs some credit, but it was pretty obvious from most people's standpoints that they were bringing him in to, you know, be another fighter for Bobby Lashley to get a decent win over.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was a lot of controversy around that fight. And, yeah, again, John Shorley, not a great MMA ref. And overall, what this says about Lashley, God bless you, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we could talk about the controversies all night, but, I mean, as far as the fight goes, I mean, there just wasn't... The thing that kind of stood out to me was, like, Lashley's got good wrestling. He didn't show much improvement anywhere else. And, you know, he really... Who knows how badly, you know, that cut was or anything like that, but he really seemed to, like, you know... I think that was the first time he'd really gotten beat up, and obviously he lost because of it. But, I mean, you know... As far as his MMA career goes, he's kind of young into his career. You know, who knows how well he, you know, reacts to, you know, getting beat up, taking those cuts, that sort of thing. I mean, that's always something to factor in with a guy who only has 5-6 fights.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a big part of his issue was that he had gassed out.
Yeah.
And I attribute that more to anything else than that he does a lot of steroids and carries around a whole lot of muscle. Bobby Lashley wrestled at 177 pounds in college. And it's like 100 pounds more than that now. So I'm going to say case closed.
So this is the opinion show. I got it. Okay. Also, I'd say Chad Griggs probably won by sweet sideburns. I don't know if you've seen them.
I didn't see them, no.
Okay, I got a photo pulled up on the computer if you want to check it out. It's pretty nice sideburns.
Those are some pretty cool chops.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, I think... The commentators did make immediate reference to, like, wow, Bobby Lashley sure is carrying a lot of muscle around. They didn't make unfounded steroid rumors or anything like that. But definitely it's like, oh, should he lose some of that muscle mass and try and trim down so maybe that'll help? And you're like, yeah, that's kind of a knee-jerk reaction. Like, it was, like, immediately after he lost. So, like, wow, he sure is, maybe he should cut weight or something. And that's something to consider eventually maybe, but, I mean... The guy's first pro MMA loss, I mean,
yeah.
All kinds of other things to consider and talk about before you get there, I think. But, yeah, I mean, it was a... Bobby Lashley was winning the fight until he lost it, and you can blame John Shorley for that if you want to, but, you know, it's the first pro loss of Lashley's career, and we'll see where he goes from here. Definitely
yeah.
not the contender that people were saying he was going to be or was or Strikeforce wanted him to be, but just another guy who has a... Get some eyeballs drawn to him.
They're already making rumblings again, though, of the Dave Bautista fight.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. Hopefully he doesn't get too tired in this time.
I think if that went past the first round, it would just be bad news all around. I would think, you know. Yeah, we kind of jumped around and we talked about the controversy a little bit first, but let's go to the main event. Mo Lawal taking a third round TKO loss to Rafael Cavalcante.
Bomber.
Feijão. And you know, that was a good back and forth fight. I mean, it was five rounds. They only went into the third, you know, kind of briefly, but it was one of those fights where it was very compact. It was good back and forth, and then they had the finish, even though they only went, you know, not even half the fight. But you know, I think it sounds like from some reports that Lawal was winning on the scorecards both rounds, and you can make the argument maybe he won one and Feijão won one. But you know, it was a pretty interesting fight. We had a really sweet takedown from Lawal earlier in the fight.
He had a big old slam, didn't he?
Oh my goodness, yeah! Like I rewound it a couple times on my DVR. And you see impressive slams every once in a while, but it was kind of like a side slam almost, like
on the ribs.
Something. It was just not the typical type slam you're used to. So it was kind of neat to see.
I'll see if I can check that out on YouTube.
I know Feijão was able to stop at least one takedown, that sort of thing. And when he did get taken down, he was able to get up relatively quick. The thing was, we didn't see Lawal do as much wrestling as he had in the past, which
spent more time standing.
Yeah, and you know, he's got good power in his hands, and we've seen some of his previous fights. But as far as the technique goes, he had the hands kind of hung low. And, you know, that's a choice, but it clearly cost him. And, you know, he did have some decent stand-up going. You know, he was working the body shots, which is something you don't see a lot. But it also ended up leading to the finish of the fight, because if you got your hands low and you're throwing body shots on your opponent, it's easy for them to grab your head and knee you in the face.
Yeah, and that sucks.
Which is what happened and led to the finish of the fight.
Yeah,
so.
But Mo's had success there before. He knocked the crap out of Mike Whitehead. Earlier this year, I think, maybe late last year. And, you know, he looked great against Musasi, comparatively, because, you know, he got really tired in that fight, but was still, like, pressing on. A lot of people kind of wither when they get tired, and he was still going and caught his second wind.
Yeah, he was able to get those takedowns and finish, grind out that decision, which is...
So how was he looking in the third round of this fight? Because I was kind of worried about his gas tank.
You know, he didn't look too terrible. It's always hard to say. I mean, he's never been like this, like, you know, guy jetting around the ring. And it just kind of the style he presents is kind of, you know, a little weights a little bit. So he's not like this huge explosive, like, you know, throwing like 100 punches a minute guy.
So he's not explosive and athletic?
He can be a little bit. He's been known to be explosive and athletic. At times.
When he chooses to be.
Right. But I'd say he seemed a little more measured in this fight. There were definitely a few times where they got into exchanges, and he was throwing some pretty heavy hands back and forth. But, no, I mean, he looked all right. And he did look, I think, he didn't look like he had gassed out as bad as he did in that Musasi fight, clearly.
Well, that's good.
But, yeah, and, you know, we talked a lot about what happened to Lawal, but you got to, I mean, give props to Rafael Cavalcante, who was, you know, really, you know, showed a... Obviously, he's got some good hands, got some good power, and nice work in the clinch, and, you know, was able to, you know, he wasn't able to stop every takedown, but he was able to prevent and stop a few takedowns of Lawal, so that was good there, and, I mean, it was a good showing for him, you know.
Excellent.
So it was a fun fight, you know. I think, you know, we can talk a little bit later about Strikeforce trying to build up certain fighters and then having them lose and it blow up in their face. This is the fun of MMA, you know, guys who aren't expected to win, and you get hopefully interesting match making after that. But with Strikeforce, it's always kind of iffy because they have less depth.
Yeah, and I think that's why they try to build up the names like that. I mean, you would like them to not really care who wins, you know, like the UFC does, where it's like, you know, it'll be cool if this guy wins, but if this guy wins here, you know, that'll be cool too.
Right.
But in Strikeforce, like, they need to have stars, and they really don't have a whole lot of options for stars. And, I mean, why else would they go with a guy like Bobby Lashley, who really is more named than he is talent at this point? He's got potential to be a talented fighter at one point. But, you know, at this point, there's really nothing there in terms of, like, saying that he's going to be great.
Right,
know?
Yeah, I mean, based on what he's done and who he's fought, I mean, if his name wasn't Bobby Lashley, he'd still be fighting, like, kind of local, like, regional shows or maybe some shows over in Japan or something like that. Like, he wouldn't be in a Strikeforce right now.
And even King Mo, you know, he got that big win over Musashi, but other than that, you know, he's got a pretty slim resume as well. He's only, like, 6-1 now or 5-1?
Yeah,
and
well, that's another thing to, I mean, remember, it's funny, I mean, like, I should stop reading the internet sometimes when people are like, oh, King Mo's, like, you know, oh, these guys have been exposed, that sort of thing. I'm like, okay, yeah, part of it was like, you know, he had you know, an impressive performance over Musashi, had a title, but you gotta remember, he's only been fighting for, like, about 2 years.
Yeah.
This was basically a prospect who had a Strikeforce belt. Like, this wasn't like the, you know, the next big thing necessarily. He was still a guy developing and, you know, Still learning on the job, I think is a good way to put it.
Yeah, well, you know, that it could be argued that that's what Brock Lesnar is a prospect who holds a UFC belt.
Right, well, and, you know, for every Brock Lesnar who is able, but has run through several opponents, there's going to be guys who, you know, get there, and then you're going to have falters like many MMA fighters do. So, I don't know, I think there's a lot of things that, like, the expectations for certain fighters get pushed too high too soon, and then it's hard to, like, be like, oh, well, let's try and reset our expectations, you know. It's already been put in that position, but, you know, just the post-fight interview with Lawal, he was pretty concise, but you know, basically says, like, yeah, you know, I saw something. He wasn't, you know, too hard on him, too ostentatious, which is, you know, good for a guy with his personality.
He didn't make a big old sticky mess? Because now would be the time to do it.
There was
no
rock star, you know, sad party or anything like that, but he basically says, like, yeah, you know, there's some things I obviously need to work on, I'll come back, work on those, and basically, like, you know, true champions are the guys who come back and rebound after a loss, so.
Heck yeah.
We'll see what happens. I mean, yeah, guys, you know, he's 7-1 now, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure he'll probably be able to bounce back from this.
I hope so. I'd like to see him get his crown back.
I think he gets to keep the crown, just not the belt. He buys those at Value Village, the crowns. So.
Oh, not the belt?
Oh, man, they have those there?
I think so.
Get me a few of them.
The other title belt bout on the card was for...
middleweight.
Jake Shields' vacated middleweight belt. Jacare Souza beat Tim Kennedy, 5-round decision. That was a good fight. It was a little slow-paced. I mean, obviously, went the distance. And, you know, sometimes you have fights that go the distance, and it's like the guys are like, you know, on some sort of insane adrenaline sugar rush and throwing, like, 200 punches around. This is not one of those fights. I mean, it had some instances where it was very exciting, but for the most part, it was kind of like a well-paced back-and-forth match. Souza ended up, as I mentioned, taking the unanimous decision, and I don't think Kennedy... some people said it was a very close fight, but I don't think Kennedy, like, decisively won any, like, I don't think you could make the argument that he won the fight.
Yeah.
It was one of those things like, Souza won. That seems pretty clear, but it was also pretty clear that, you know, he didn't blow him out of the water.
Well, I heard Kennedy's argument was that while he may not have landed the power shots, he landed more strikes.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Even if it's by
argument.
A narrow margin, but then he was also the only one to ever effectively get a takedown.
Which was weird, because Jacare Souza is kind of known for being this beast on the ground. And he had his multiple takedowns stuffed by Tim Kennedy, and Tim Kennedy got one or two takedowns on Souza. So
yeah.
It was this bizarro world, and Jacare was actually, and again, this guy's kind of learning on the job. This guy who's a jiu-jitsu ace, and everyone kind of fears him on the ground. His nickname's like, you know, the Gator or whatever. But, you know, he showed really good stand-up, and his stand-up was, you know, a lot of times a lot better than Tim Kennedy's. I mentioned a lot during the broadcast, during the fight, that, you know, Jacare was, you know, doing that thing where he keeps his chin down, where Tim Kennedy kind of had a more straightforward stance and is, you know, definitely seemed easier to hit. But, I mean, Jacare looked a lot, and we started noticing this, I think, with the Matt Lindland fight he had a while ago, that, you know, his stand-up's definitely improving. It, looked pretty solid here. So,
excellent.
That is...
I hear Tim Kennedy is a superhero, though. He's like a Green Beret and
had
1,000 firefights in Iraq or
something. Yeah, that was mentioned a few times, and that's... We can go into the marketing of that. You know, again, certainly Tim Kennedy, very marketable. You know, and he's got that really interesting human interest story with, you know, his background in the military and all of that. So certainly, I mean, guys, Strikeforce would like to have wins so they can continue to market them, you know, at this high level, and both Kennedy and Lawal lost. But, you know, again...
And Lashley.
Yeah, and Lashley, but he didn't have a belt.
That's true.
And he was not in the pre-event hype video, so that was...
Really?
Yeah, it was they basically sold it as USA versus Brazil. It was King Mo and Tim Kennedy versus Jacare and Cavalcante, and, you know, we'll see where it goes. I mean, yeah. I think Jacare is probably going to hold on to that middleweight belt for a while. Again, you know, I think middleweight's kind of like one of the more deep divisions that Strikeforce has, and again, they have depth issues in all of their divisions.
Yeah,
but
they've got Mayhem there.
They get the rematch, because I think they're at one each or something like that, or one in a DQ or something.
I thought there was a no contest. Did they have more than one fight? I just remember like a no contest or disqualification or something.
I bet the internet knows.
I bet it does.
Choose the internet!
So while you're looking that up, how about that George Gurgel fight against KJ Nunes?
Yeah.
Wasn't he robbed?
He was not robbed, because he would have lost either way. But another instance of just like bad reffing. Not John Shorley. In this case, different ref.
Oh, different ref. Different bad ref.
I believe so. I want to double-check that now. But now I'm double-checking, like, three things. Jacare Souza and Jason Mayhem Miller fought twice. Jacare beat Mayhem Miller the first time at the Dream Middleweight Grand Prix quarterfinals 2008. And then there was a no contest in 2009 during the Featherweight Grand Prix. From an illegal kick. Well, that's what the event was called. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so they can have their third match at some point down the line. Who
for
knows?
The title.
Yeah.
Go Mayhem.
Yeah, I mean it's Strikeforce. They give title shots to guys who have lost fights, so it's not a huge deal.
Well, and he's actually coming off a win.
This is true. A win that.
Although he did get his ass kicked by Nick Diaz most recently, I guess.
What? When did this happen?
The same night he won his last fight. Nick Diaz, Nate Diaz, Gilbert Melendez.
There were so many people involved in that, yeah.
Yeah. It happens all the time, ladies and gentlemen. There's a lot of testosterone in there.
Hey, they're going to fight for real. Don't be scared, homie. But what were we talking about before that?
George Gurgel,
yeah.
Getting his butt kicked?
Yeah, okay. So, and I'm double-checking to make sure John Shorley was not the ref in that fight, because I don't think he was. I think it was a different ref. And it was some bad reffing. I don't know if it was as... It wasn't as terrible. But basically what happened is KJ Nunes knocked the bejesus out of George Gurgel for a round, and then 10 seconds into the second round, and then finished him. But there was two instances where, at the end of the first round, there was a late hit by KJ Nunes. It was in the midst of an exchange, and it was like about like the bell goes off and then the punch lands. It wasn't like a Paul Daly, Josh Koscheck, hey, the round's clearly over, da 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 da, and punch. It was like they were in the middle of an exchange, the bell rung basically as KJ Nunes was throwing, and George Gurgel, to his credit, has come out and said, you know, he doesn't have bad feelings about that. You know, it's not, you know, he doesn't think he's a dirty fighter or anything like that. It just happened to be like I think an overhand left, something ridiculous like that totally like floored him.
Yeah.
At the end of the first round, put him on Dream Street, basically. But you know,
and he never really recovered from that, did he?
No. But he came out for the second round, and there was another exchange, and that's a highlight reel exchange right there. Is KJ Nunes caught him with, I think it was a right, and that kind of, you know, knocked Gurgel back. Kind of, he was basically falling over at that point, and then Nunes came with another punch, I believe a left. That really just kind of sealed the deal.
But not quite, apparently, according to the ref.
Right, because then we have the ref run in, but not stop the fight, but get, like, right in their business. And he's like, And you got to watch it to see, like, how, like, it was just awkward to watch. Because you're like, okay, the ref's going to stop the fight. But then he just kind of stands there and watches. And he's like, nope, go about your business.
Right, right or wrong, reffing is 90% confidence.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, whether it was a good or bad call, like, should have been stopped immediately, that sort of thing, you got to commit. Is basically it, and the refs have to be decisive. And he was not. So, like, KJ Nunes, like, looked at the ref, he's like, okay, punch, 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 and then the ref's like, okay, let me put a hand on your shoulder because I think the fight's over.
He kind of wipes him away.
As KJ Nunes throws a knee, which is illegal. He shouldn't have thrown it because it was an illegal knee. But the ref didn't get in there and, like, the ref, to me, it looked like the ref was going to stop the fight before KJ Nunes threw the knee. But he didn't, like, do the body in between or, like, fights over and grab the guy and pull him off. It was like...
I like the old school tackle.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Again, be decisive. He kind of, like, hand on the shoulder, gently, like, hey, buddy. Oh, no, you just threw an illegal knee. That's not good.
Yeah.
So it was just, like, this whole debacle. And
Frank Shamrock thinks that's legal, though.
Yeah, I don't know what... Again, like, everyone makes fun of the Strikeforce commentating, so I don't want to, like, jump on the bandwagon. But there was another instance where I was like, really? Because, like, Marwan Nala was like, okay, illegal knee, and Frank Sham was like, well, I don't know. And I didn't have the rule book in front of me, but I'm pretty sure, like, a grounded opponent, it counts as a guy who's sitting on his ass.
Well...
Technically, he wasn't touching his knee to the ground. It's just like his entire, like, you know, legs and butt were on the ground.
Yeah, well, I think what this has to do with, you know how we've talked about how I don't think necessarily Shamrock is a bad commentator as just an overly biased commentator. And he himself lost a few years ago to Henzo Gracie by illegal knees to a head of a downed opponent.
Oops.
So I think that's where this came from.
Right. And who knows if he was trying to say, like, well, yeah, it was an illegal knee, but it didn't change the outcome of the fight. But, like, they got, like, as announcers, you got to commit to, like, this was clearly an illegal knee. Whether it merits a DQ or not, a different issue. But, like, it was really weird that Marvel and I was like, he was like, really, when he was like, come on, man, that was an illegal knee. Mm. It was really bizarre. Like, they couldn't agree on that either. So, just an insane night. But, I mean...
Kind of like a messy Strikeforce card, huh?
Right. And, you know, you can put some of that on Strikeforce, as people always do. And, you know, some of it's like how they're promoting their fighters, that sort of thing. But, again, I think we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, this is why you might want to think twice before promoting an MMA card in Texas. They've got some issues clearly they need to work out. Much has been made, I think, of the UFC. They bring in a lot of officials, that sort of thing, when they go to a state that doesn't have strong regulation, or they go to a place that has no regulation, you know, they're like, oh yeah, we'll do our own drug testing, we'll bring in a couple extra refs in addition to the refs the state provides, that sort of thing, so we have good ones. And to their credit, Strikeforce did have Big John McCarthy for the main for the two title fights, but
that's good.
Yeah, so just, but I mean, overall, aside from the controversy, I mean, the fights themselves I found pretty interesting. I thought it was a good night of fights. They didn't go, like, you know, again, like, I think the only time they have, like, major debacles with, like, their cards and the card length is when they're on CBS.
Yeah.
And, like, that. But, I mean, you know, with all the stuff going on, interesting nights of fights, and really, you know, mixes up the different divisions for Strikeforce. Again, they didn't have a huge ton of depth, but, you know, we already knew that Babalu wouldn't fight King Mo.
Yeah, so that opens it up.
So now we have, you know, I don't know if we're going to have Babalu versus Dan Henderson, and then maybe whoever wins that will... fight for the middleweight belt.
We get the Brazil versus Brazil thing going
Yeah,
on.
Who knows what'll happen, but, you know, at least maybe a few more options there, you know, with a win, Gegard Mousasi could be back in the title picture, or, you know, maybe he doesn't even need a win to get back in the title picture. Yeah. But, you know, a few more options, and then we get to see how Mo Lawal rebounds from his first loss, see how Bobby Lashley rebounds from his first loss, you know, see if Strikeforce can promote guys who are not American.
Oof.
I mean, they did, Fedor, of course, but I don't know.
They've still got Gilbert Melendez.
Still got Gilbert Melendez, and, you know,
and Nick Diaz. He's promotable.
He is a promotion machine. But
they should just, like, make a rap video with Nick Diaz in it.
And they did announce that Nick Diaz will be fighting again in October on a Strikeforce card. They didn't announce his opponent, which is kind of what they do. And, you know, once they get the opponent, of course they'll name him. But it's that's one of the...
It better not just be some guy.
I don't think it will be. Because I think that's one of the things that bothers me about the Strikeforce promotion is sometimes they'll just announce, like, oh, yeah, we have a card coming up in a couple months, and this fighter will be on it. And if they haven't signed an opponent, I get that. But sometimes they're like... Sometimes it seems like they're not interested in who the opponent is.
Yeah.
But, like, this card's a perfect example. They promoted, you know, on the web and that sort of thing. They promoted who were in the title fights, who were fighting each other. But then after that, it was like, also featuring Bobby Lashley and KJ Nunes. I'm like, are you guys going to mention their opponents?
Well, you know, George Gurgel is notable just because he's been in the UFC, but,
right.
You know, who the hell is Chad Griggs?
Right.
Like,
well, and that's you can make the argument that's kind of Strikeforce's job to promote the opponent as well. Because we mentioned, like, you talked about how the UFC is, like, they have this thing where it's like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe we want this guy to win, but, you know, if this guy wins, that's okay, too. And I think they do a better job hyping the fights that way, where they actually show, give you reasons to like and root for both fighters, whereas Strikeforce is like, Bobby Lashley, dun-dun-dun, also he's fighting some guy.
Yeah, which, you know, I guess that also doesn't make you look any good when you win, because it's like, you know, is this just some guy they pulled out of the crowd?
Right, it's kind of a lose-lose situation. Maybe it's like, oh, because if he beats him, he was supposed to beat him, and if he loses, he's like, whoa, that's crazy. This guy was a can. He shouldn't have lost to him.
Yeah.
But it's you mentioned Strikeforce, yeah, and I agree with you. Strikeforce needs stars. The UFC is a brand, and it sells based on the brand, and certainly different pay-per-views sell better with different fighters on them, but as a whole, the UFC is pretty well established as its own brand. Strikeforce isn't there. They have to market certain fighters, you know. They have Fedor, you know, for the longest time considered like the top heavyweight in MMA, and then they're trying to build other MMA stars, so it's kind of a trade-off, and we'll see how it pans out, I guess.
All right, we will see that.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not.
Maybe, I mean, unless we stop paying attention.
Yeah.
Or until they just crumble.
Also important to note, I didn't get to watch them because I was out doing stuff Saturday, but SureDog.com was able to stream two Strikeforce prelims.
Oh,
hey,
whoa.
Keep it up.
So hopefully we'll
hope the Strikeforce doesn't get pissed about it, letting us see those prelims.
I think it'd be Showtime would be upset. But
those are our prelims. You can't have them.
We have the right to never show those ever. But Andre Galvao beat Jorge Patino TKO in the third round.
Cool.
And heavyweight prospect Daniel Cormier beat Jason Riley submission punches 1 minute into the first round of their fight.
That's what I like to hear.
So keep your eye on Cormier. He's another, and yeah, I think it's the guys that Strikeforce don't overhype that probably have the best potential, you know.
Yeah, have him fight Bobby Lashley now.
But yeah, Daniel Cormier, you know, I believe he's just 5-0, something like that. You know, a young guy. But he also important to note, he's fought several times just in the last few weeks.
Really? And he's 5-0, which means he started like a month ago.
He started in 2009, honestly. Yeah. So I mean, like September of 2009. So yeah, I mean, he's relatively new on the scene. But yeah, I believe he fought two or three times just within this last month long period. Yeah, July 31st. Then August 13th and August 21st.
Impressive.
Yeah. All wins, all in the first round. So get that time. Because, I mean, really, with prospects, you know, you can them fight guys who aren't that good. That's kind of the point, to see, have them fight, you know, guys who have been around, have some experience, but, you know, see how they do and then gradually work them up, you know. We'll see how he does. And if he continues to grow, maybe we'll maybe see him on the main cards, and maybe Daniel Cormier would be someone you'll want to be keeping an eye out in the next couple of years. Who knows? But the idea of like slow growth with prospects, I think, is something that people have really kind of shied away from recently with guys like Mo Lawal, who get that big attention, or the UFC John Jones, who's throwing spinning back fists and main eventing UFC on Versus cards.
And it's such a fickle industry too, because now Mo's going to be out for 6 months.
He's got a knee injury. We didn't even mention that.
And so injuries happen, you know, pretty fast and all the time. You have to kind of strike while the iron's hot if you want to be able to kind of build your brand as quickly as I think Strikeforce wants. They had some pretty good fire going there for a little bit, but due to some poor CBS cards and then the dethroning of Fedor, it seems like that they're probably in for a pretty big rough patch.
Right, yeah, see who they can, you know, market that sort of thing. And
well, at least a lot of their guys that were involved in the brawl, who are honestly some of their more marketable guys at this point, should be coming back here pretty soon. You got Nick Diaz, Mayhem Miller, Gilbert Melendez, you know, all those guys. Like, they can start fighting again. And, you know, at this point, that's probably their best bet.
Yeah. And honestly, we mentioned the Nick Diaz being featured on the San Jose October 9th card, Strikeforce. Opponent to be determined or to be announced. But I wouldn't be surprised if they're angling for a Mayhem Miller, like, catchweight bout or something like that.
They should.
There's been some, we mentioned before, like, the online back and forth.
Or maybe they could try to milk it for a little bit more. Maybe, like, have this one not, you know, be that catchweight belt and then for the next one.
Yeah,
you know, so they could really just kind of milk this this feud for all it's worth.
Yeah, but I know I think Nick Diaz has said something about like not wanting to fight at a catchweight or not fighting any other weight other than welterweight. So we'll see. But I think that's obviously the most promotable fight they could have for Nick Diaz at this moment would be Mayhem Miller, because talk about two like polar opposite characters. I mean, Mayhem Miller is like this out there wacky guy. Nick Diaz is like this tough guy who's
this thug.
Just make fun of Mayhem Miller for being a clown and. It would be great. So who knows what will happen. They also announced the Sarah Kaufman, Marlos Kunin.
And that will be a main card.
That'll be on a main card, yeah. So
there
you
go.
There we go. And then the winner of that will fight Miesha Tate for the... there you go. You have like two fights lined up for in Strikeforce, which is something you don't hear too often.
Well, we don't actually know who Nick Diaz is fighting.
Yet. Right, we don't know who Nick Diaz is fighting, but I mean, as far as the, like, we know who Sarah Kaufman's fighting next, and then we know who the winner of that fight will fight after that.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about two fights lined up for her.
Right, because Misha Tate recently won the Strikeforce, like, little one-night, 135 women's tournament to fight the winner of the Marlos Kunin, Sarah Kaufman fight. So, yeah, a couple announcements coming out of the weekend as well. I guess with that, we should probably transition into talking about the UFC this weekend, huh?
Oh, snap. 118, huh? 118. Edgar Penn, too?
And boxing versus MMA. I mean, the UFC, not MMA.
That's
UFC.
Right. Boxing versus the Expendables.
I hope
that yet?
I have not. I hope part of Randy Couture's like hype package is him talking about why cauliflower air is a thing.
Yeah. You know, I wrestled in college. That was an awful Randy Couture impression. I'm going to kick your butt, James Toney. This is a serious condition. I didn't take care of my ears when I was wrestling. Cauliflower ear. Drain it.
That is a pretty terrible Randy Couture
impression.
That's
about as bad as you can get, I would say.
That sounds about right to me.
But let's get to the not sideshow attraction fights first.
Okay.
Which one do you want to do first, Tobin?
Should we start with the main event or work our way up?
Let's start from the top.
Where do you want to go?
Yeah. Rematch: Frankie Edgar, BJ Penn.
Okay.
The lightweight championship.
I'm almost thinking that they should have given Edgar a different bout.
Interesting argument. I disagree.
Okay. Well, I'll
shut
up now.
Tobin.
Hold on. Go ahead and say why, Matt. And then
Edgar
will tear
won.
Your argument apart.
Yeah, exactly. Edgar won. Perhaps BJ Penn wasn't ready, but it's not Frankie Edgar's fault. He won fair and square. Give him another. Give him a different shot to defend his title.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Okay.
I've stated my piece.
Well said. And, I think that is a legit argument. The thing is, I think part of it comes down to, we just talked about how Strikeforce wants certain fighters to win, and I don't think that's necessarily the case with the UFC, but I think there is something to be said with, like, they have these dominant champions that they have had in a lot of the weight classes for some time, and, whether you think that's reason enough that, like, oh, well, he's been champion for a while, like, I think there is something to be said, especially in a close fight like this, where a guy who's been champ for so long, been so dominant in division, loses a close decision. Some say it was controversial, that sort of thing. I think you deserve an immediate rematch. It'd be one thing if Frankie Edgar, like, knocked BJ Penn out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle of your two arguments. I can definitely see both sides. And the decision makes me kind of lean towards the rematch being the right decision, just because it was really close.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when Matt Serra knocked out George St. Pierre, George St. Pierre didn't get that rematch for like a year. But, he was also knocked out, and then there were some injuries that kind of played into that. But even then, he didn't get a rematch right away. But, he was knocked out. This was a decision for one, but extremely close decision. So I think because of that, it doesn't give me heartburn to see the rematch be put into play right away. I kind of would have liked to see some other matchups just because, it'd shake things up. And it's a division that, while everyone below BJ Penn was really exciting, BJ Penn himself was really boring for a while because he was just like, this, like, supreme guy that, nobody's going to be able to knock off the pedestal. And even if he just barely got nudged off, that's enough to shake things up when they're basically looking to put things right back where they were, which, BJ probably deserves it, and it very well might just be part of his contract, because that's happened before. But it would have been cool to maybe see BJ Penn fight Gray Maynard and then have Kenny Florian fight for the title.
Kenny Florian would have finally won a title.
Maybe he would have. Maybe he would have spent the whole time on his back.
Yeah.
Who knows? But I just think there would have been some other fights that could have happened and may have been a little more interesting, but this fight doesn't bother me being put together right away.
Right. You mentioned Kenny Florian and Gray Maynard, and they're actually fighting on this very same card for what could potentially be a number one contender spot.
Unless Gray wins. Because nobody wants to see him fight for a title.
But he already beat Frankie Edgar.
He did.
It's going to be... I think if Gray Maynard wins, he'll probably get a title shot either way. The thing is, if Kenny Florian wins and BJ Penn wins, then it's going to be this weird thing. It's like, we already saw BJ Penn kill Kenny Florian, and Kenny Florian's already had, what, two title shots?
He has.
But I think he's earned it, you know, if you fight your way back up.
Yeah. I think, you know, and I think that's probably the most likely scenario. We didn't really break down the BJ Penn-Edgar fight.
I guess we should pick it, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I think I would lean towards BJ Penn, even though, you know, like, we all picked BJ Penn, I think, last time, and he lost.
Right.
But it's a lot like the Machida-Shogun fight, where the first time everyone's like, whoa, but I'm still picking this guy next time, because, yeah.
That shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. I still think BJ Penn is the better fighter of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Frankie Edgar showed me that he's better than I thought he was, but, you know, I think BJ Penn should probably be able to pull it off. I don't know if motivation played a factor at all. It's something that he's had issues with the past, and, you know, he was supposed to be the new and improved BJ Penn who has no longer got motivation issues since his last loss to George St. Pierre. But at the same time, he completely dominated two top contenders, and then this was a guy who wasn't talking any trash. Nobody gave him a chance to beat him. So maybe he didn't find the motivation, and he does now. I don't know what it was, but, you know, he lost a very narrow decision last time, and I don't think it's going to happen twice.
Yeah, the motivation's an interesting thing, and... You know, I think that'll play a factor. I think we're going to see BJ Penn come out more aggressive this time. And I think I mentioned it, you know, right after we broke down that first fight, you know, kind of the weekend review thing, that, you know, I didn't know if BJ Penn was sick or something like that, but he just seemed sluggish. He seemed off. And that's not to take anything away from what Frankie Edgar did that night, but it wasn't like this BJ Penn we had been used to seeing. Like something, he didn't seem as aggressive. He didn't, you know, seem to have that spark really that we saw when he was, like, killing Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
And I think because he's coming off a loss now to this Frankie Edgar, I think he's going to come out more aggressive, and might not play the because he was playing a counterpuncher's game in their last fight, and you know that doesn't always play well with the judges, and it didn't play well for him that night. So I think we're going to see him, come out and throw be more aggressive, throw some more heavy hands earlier in the fight to put a stamp on it, and yeah. We'll probably feel the same way we did after the Shogun Machida rematch again, and having picked the same guy or picked the wrong guy twice or whatever. But
well, I don't think we're gonna feel that way,
right? And I don't think we will either. But it just like the way rematches go and stuff, whatever. But yeah, I'm in favor of BJ Penn on this fight. And you know, Matt, what say you?
I will say Frankie Edgar,
yeah.
Because if anybody has any more motivation, it would probably be him.
Right.
You know, he doesn't want
to bet it wasn't a fluke.
Yeah, and yeah. He doesn't want to have this title, and then he just had it for a fleeting second. You know, yeah, you're the champion, but you couldn't withhold being the champion. You know, your first match back as the champion, you lose. So I'm going to say that that Edgar is going to pull it out somehow.
All right. How many cast members from Jersey Shore do you think will be in his corner or in his entourage?
Any? Really? Is he from that area?
He is from Jersey. Yeah. I don't know that he...
Well, it depends on how much, he's going to pay them.
Right.
Because the situation's getting paid $5 million this year.
Damn.
And that's kind of how they make their money these days. They go to parties and they get paid for it. So unless
UFC... I wish we could be that somewhat not famous.
Yeah, I don't think we'd be that fun to party with, to be honest with you.
I don't care if I'm fun to party with. I just want to get paid to go to parties.
Right.
Like, I don't think the people in Jersey
Shore... Well, who would want you at a party?
Well, that's the thing. If I was on a crappy MTV show...
And you'd be, like, refusing BJs the whole time?
Whoa, no, I don't want that. Well, I mean, honestly, I don't think the people from, Jersey Shore would be fun to be at a party with.
No, they probably wouldn't.
No, but they could fist pump like you wouldn't believe.
They can battle the beat, and Ronnie's a pretty good dancer. Huh? Did I give away too much? I don't watch that show.
I know there's a guy on there who makes sandwiches. Who's that?
That's Vinny.
You're going to be the best sandwich maker in the world, right?
You're going to be the king sandwich man.
Not a thing, guy. Come on. Not 1950.
Check out this sandwich.
All right, so back to the fights. Yeah, so 2-1, BJ Penn taking his title back.
And yeah, it's probably going to happen that way, but I've just been burned so many times with not taking the underdog, but I'm sticking with it this time.
Well, I think that's interesting to note. Frankie Edgar beat BJ Penn. He's now the number ranked lightweight in the world, still the underdog. Because, again, I think it goes back to the fans and a lot of the MMA media and, pundits and all that just being like, well, none of us expected that to happen. It must be... like an abnormality.
It probably was a fluke, and I saw BJ Penn in that same fight, and he did look sluggish and everything like that, and I didn't know that he's had, like Greg said, motivational issues.
Just needs to get a little blood on his gloves.
I don't know what his problem is, dude. Maybe it's his laissez-faire attitude about everything.
Yeah, dude,
but...
he lives in Hawaii. Like, I don't know how I'd stay motivated. Right. Like, got them beaches to hang out with, get some pineapple.
You know what I bet helps, though?
Burgers.
Running underwater with rocks in your hands.
Yeah, and doing 3-foot jumps out of pools.
That's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive, yeah.
Okay, so back to the fight we tried to move on to before we actually realized we hadn't picked the main event.
Kenny Florian,
great.
He's
going to
win.
I'm favoring Kenny Florian in this. Ken Flo, man, that's a terrible nickname. I hate nicknames where they just combine, like, the first and last part of their...
What do you mean, Toe Shell?
Yeah, let's not do that.
I'm going to pick Florian, too, but I'm going to pick him by not being a bitch, because I hate Gray Maynard.
Explain your hate for Gray Maynard.
Have you ever seen him fight?
I saw the Diaz fight.
Okay, well, that was better than most of them. He's just a decision machine. He doesn't even try to finish
fights.
But
his nickname's the Bully.
Yeah, well, bullies don't finish people off usually either. They just ask for lunch money. And, I don't like bullies either, so F... Gray, and he's going to lose by knockout, unless he goes for the takedown, which seems like the kind of thing he might do, especially since he'll be losing so bad standing up, in which case he'll get swept and subbed, probably by rear naked choke.
Yeah, I think that's... Gray Maynard does have good wrestling, and I think it's possible that he could get a takedown, but I think it goes to the finishing idea. I mean, looking at his record, and again, guys grow and change, but his last... I'm going to say 800 fights. No, been the last, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Last 7 fights, it looks like. 6 fights, I apologize.
7 out of the 9?
Last 6 fights and 7 out of his 10 fights total or something like that. 9 fights total. You were right, Matt. Have been decisions. The last 2 being split decisions, which, I don't think a split decision is what it used to be, because MMA reffing or MMA judging can be so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But,
Well, according to Sherdog here, he's only got 1 finish and then 1 not applicable, because they don't know what happened there. It was probably a decision.
But, yeah, 6 of his 8 UFC fights have been decisions. Based on that, you can say, can he finish? Maybe not. Doesn't seem like it. And Kenny Florian definitely has multiple ways that he can finish. We've seen him have much improved stand-up, especially when he just, cleaned... I just totally spaced on his name. Yeah, I was about to call him Captain Caveman, so I'm glad you saved me.
Caveman!
Clay Guida really cleaned his clock before finishing him. Was that beating him stand up and then went to a finish on the ground,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But we
knocked
seen,
him down and slept on the choke.
But I think that's something really impressive about Kenny Florian. Every time he's coming off of a loss, he really goes to different, implements different, and grows in different aspects of his fighting style.
Yeah,
he doesn't stick to one thing. He's very well rounded, and he's really grown a lot, in that. And I think he could finish it standing up, or at least get the better of Maynard standing up and leading to a finish on the ground. And we've seen his last couple fights. He likes the rear naked choke.
It's his submission of choice for sure. He's got all kinds of tools standing up. As you mentioned, it's kind of funny, He used to just be a jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah.
And then he lost to Sean Shirk, and then became a Muay Thai guy, to the point where, in his fights, they call him Muay Thai Ace, Kenny Florian. And then he loses to BJ Penn, and all of a sudden he starts, boxing, and, works really hard on his hands. I wonder what he'll do next time he loses, because, it's inevitable.
Capoeira.
Yeah, maybe judo or, kung fu or something. He'll do something crazy.
Oh, by the way, tangential, retroactive backtracking to, the WEC event we barely talked about. Anthony Pettis, winning his fight, busted out some capoeira moves.
Excellent.
Really?
Ridiculous. Yeah.
The little dance foot thing
you
can do?
Back to present day. He was, hands on the ground doing a spinny.
Did he hit
thing.
Him with it?
Yeah.
Really?
If you guys can track down the Anthony Pettis fight, I think Anthony Pettis, Shane Roller, He put on some pretty fancy smancy striking. So back to present day, what we're talking about.
Ken Flo, I'll take him.
Ken Flo versus the Bully. So all three for Kenny Florian. And, yeah, I think it really goes back to, like, what are his options for winning. And Gray Maynard seems – I think it was the Diaz fight where Gray Maynard – you know, we talked about how Gray Maynard has good wrestling, but he seemed to be kind of content with keeping the fight standing.
Yeah, well, and that worked barely against Nate Diaz, but that's not the kind of thing that's going to work against guys like – Kenny Florian or BJ Penn,
yeah.
You're not going to be out striking him. He's going to have to use his bread and butter if he wants to win this.
Yeah.
The only way he's going to win this fight is essentially laying in Florian's guard for 15 minutes. It's the only way it's going to happen. But even then, even without submissions, Florian is extremely active with the guard, throwing those elbows, which are extremely sharp.
Yes.
So, I mean, he may just get taken down and cut the hell out of his forehead until the ref stops it.
Excellent point. So, I'll take, I know you, I think you said Kenny Florian probably finish, but I'll take him decision, but I think we're all agreed that he's going to win.
Okay.
I guess we can get to the co-main event. And, you know, I feel bad calling a fight Randy Couture's in like a sideshow, freak show attraction type fight, but they're billing it as such. Boxing versus UFC.
It's a current boxing champion. I don't know a whole lot about the way boxing is structured. I know they got multiple titles for each weight class. But James Toney currently holds one of them. So that means he's got to have at least some kind of modern prestige. I mean, he's 41 years old, so that's old.
Not in the prime of his career. But.
Yeah, that's old. You know, he's currently over the hill. But, you know, he's at least, like, decent still. And he's fighting Randy Couture, who's in a similar spot in his mixed martial arts career. I don't see Randy Couture going for another title. I do see Randy Couture beating a lot of people that are still in the UFC just because, you know, he's proven it so many times.
He's still competitive, just not competitive at the top of his division.
Yeah, he can still beat the lower-level guys. So I think in terms of, like, boxing and mixed martial arts, you know, it's not Brock Lesnar fighting whoever the hell, you know, the number one boxing heavyweight in the world is. It's not that, but it's as close as they can get right now, you know. Just because it would be insane for a boxer. I mean, even this is pretty crazy and extremely ballsy on the part of James Toney to make a move like this, but you know, we're not going to see the truest form of the boxing mixed martial arts fight probably ever. So
should briefly be noted that at the Strikeforce event, KJ Nunes did call out Floyd Mayweather, which will probably never happen.
Yeah,
but I think he actually said he'd want to, because KJ Nunes has pro boxing experience, so he said he'd like to fight Floyd Mayweather.
I'm sure he would like to get like $10 million.
Yeah.
I'd love to fight Floyd Mayweather.
I would take $10 million to get punched in the face by Floyd Mayweather. So, but back to the UFC event. Yeah. I guess we should. I mean, the discussion of this fight could really be 5 seconds long. Randy Couture should and will win this fight. But if James Toney punches him in the face, Randy Couture could totally, fall down.
Well, now I've heard a number of different things about James Toney. Clearly, he's a boxer.
Well-dressed.
Yes.
Hard to understand sometimes.
Yeah, not very well-spoken, though. But
has a ridiculous walkout T-shirt. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
No, I haven't.
It's him. He's on his own walkout T-shirt.
That's awesome.
Like him doing the muscle pose or whatever.
Is it him kind of like airbrushed on there as well? So like a cartoon version of himself?
It's kind of semi-realistic looking, but it is airbrushed. It's terrible. Like, and MMA walkout shirts in general are kind of bad because they've got like 80 things going on and in like foiled lettering and stuff. But this one's, Anyways, back to, substance of, the fight.
So, the boxer essentially has one big chance in a mixed martial arts fight. He has to land the big punch before he gets taken down, or the big combo, whatever, because he's not expected to have the takedown defense that's going to allow him to, keep the fight standing. So he's got to unleash big and hard. You know, I mean, even if it was a guy like Chuck Liddell fighting a pro boxer, Chuck would almost certainly go straight in for the takedown, unless, you know, he's had that many screws knocked loose since then. But, I mean, even a guy who's known for stand-up ability would want to take down the boxer in a mixed martial arts contest. And Randy Couture is certainly going to do that. But I don't really know a whole lot about James Toney as a boxer. kind of what I've heard is he's the counterpuncher. He's the slick kind of boxer, you know, does a lot of slips and, you know, dodges, punches, and hits you with a pat-pat afterwards. But he doesn't really sound like the big, you know, like the Mike Tyson one-punch knockout type of guy. I would imagine he hits hard because once you get to that level, everyone, I think, hits hard. But he's not like, you know, a destroyer type of boxer. He's not the juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you get the 4-ounce gloves on, that could change a lot of things. But I don't even know necessarily how much he's got of a chance of the one-punch knockout because, I mean, just kind of what I understand of his style, which could be way off base. I mean, I don't know.
Well, he might have, you know, he's been training, so in theory he might have picked up some things and might have adapted his style. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see Randy Couture stand with James Toney any longer than he needs to. I mean, and Randy Couture is not a double leg shoot in wrestler takedown. He's clinch,
yeah,
trip takedown type guy, you know, against the cage. But I don't think we're going to see, like, you know, a feeling out process of, you know, more than a couple seconds before Randy Couture goes in for a takedown of some sort.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think Toney probably knows this, so I would imagine he's got some sort of counter for a takedown ready. You know, while it's probably
loaded
not
gloves.
Yeah, well, it's not probably, you know, the sprawl necessarily. He'll probably have some sort of strike ready, you know, like if you're taking down a Muay Thai guy and you shoot in, he'll bring up the knee.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine, you know, if Randy dives right in, which, you know, he's not really the shoot-in type, you know, Toney would be ready for with an uppercut. I would think that he's going to have some sort of game plan based around that because he is only going to have a limited time. So, you know, there might be a little bit more of a feeling out period than a couple seconds just because, you know, Randy is probably going to want to time it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, he shouldn't be up for very long. I just kind of wonder what Randy is going to do once he gets on the ground. If he's going to want to, you know, end it quickly, you know, just like 30-second submission, or if he's going to want to drag it out and kind of, you know, do 3 rounds of punishment,
right,
which would prove a bigger point. Or
yeah,
if he even cares about proving a point.
Right, and I mean, just kind of the vibe I'm getting, it's that does, and you know, I'm listening kind of, it's Randy Couture's fight to handle. I mean, it's I'm clearly picking Randy Couture again. I think Randy Couture should easily win this fight, but boxers are better at punching than mixed martial artists are at punching. So if,
yeah,
for some reason, you know, if he gets caught, he gets caught. But I just think the tools he has available, you know, you mentioned, you know, Toney might have a game plan, but it's just like, We've seen it before with the fighters who've been around a bit longer, guys just not implementing what they've been taught, what they've used. You know, I mean, talk about George Gurgel all day long about how he's a jiu-jitsu black belt, and in his recent fights, and he's like, you know,
in all of his fights.
Yeah, I think he went to the ground a few times and lost or something. But yeah, like a majority of his time in the UFC and now in Strikeforce has been like him just standing and banging with guys and getting
and losing,
beat up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that James Toney's instincts are probably what's going to be his downfall.
Right.
It's like, you're a boxer. That's what you do.
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, this is his first pro MMA, his first MMA fight, period.
And 41 years, you know, right, not in the boxing game,
yeah,
but, you know, 20 maybe.
Right. So that's a lot to unlearn and be ready for, you know. And so we'll see what happens Saturday, but I expect Randy Couture to, you know, again, not want to stand with James Toney, but, you know, be able to get a takedown fairly easily. And, you know, I think he's probably going to – I wouldn't be surprised if he goes for a submission because I don't think James Toney is going to have good defense. So, you know, where Randy Couture maybe in the past is like, oh, I need to grind this guy out because he does have good submission defense or whatever, I think, you know, I think he's got a pretty decent shot of catching James Toney with, you know, a pretty simple submission.
Well, when I say Randy dragging it out for a third-round beatdown, I don't mean it to be conservative. I mean it to be a jerk.
Right.
You
spank
know
him a few times, maybe?
Yeah, just beat him up,
right,
you know, to prove, like, ha-ha, we are so much better than you,
yeah,
that I'm not even, you know, putting you away right away. I'm, like, making you suffer.
I was in a movie with Stallone.
That's right.
Mm.
And I was in The Scorpion King 2. Straight to DVD.
It was not the number one movie.
A movie called Red Belt that no one saw.
Mm.
Well, nobody really saw Scorpion King 2 either.
That's
did you see
true
that?
I did not.
Yeah.
I want to because I have a thing for bad movies.
Yeah? Have you seen Piranha 3D?
Not yet. It's, I'm not going to lie. I've seen Scott Pilgrim multiple times. I'm getting around to the rest of those movies. But let's see.
I'm gonna watch Piranha 3D.
What else has Randy Couture been in, acting wise?
Hopefully not much more.
Bad Rob Schneider movie.
Was he?
Yeah.
Which one? Animal?
He went to prison or something like that.
Oh, jeez. I don't know. You know, I mean, he's not bad. Like, he would be... I don't think I would cast him in tough guy roles. I think we've talked about this movie last week. Whereas, yeah. You know, I said just put him in as a coach.
Right.
You know, the high school coach. He'd be great at it. He's got a good look for it. He's not a tough guy. He doesn't sound intimidating when he talks, you know. His old-timey wisdom shtick in The Expendables is kind of... hacky and, you know, tacked on, just kind of like the whole movie, but, you know.
Especially because, like, Sylvester Stallone's, like, what, 10, 15 years older than him?
Gosh, really? Woof.
Yeah, Stallone's, like, 60.
You ain't got the old timey wisdom I got to.
And
Mickey Rourke is pretty old, too.
He just looks terrible.
He just looks ugly. He's ugly.
He looked good before he tried to become a boxer.
Yeah.
He tried to be a boxer?
Yeah, it didn't work out so well for his face.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, Randy just, like the coach in Freaks and Geeks, he would have been fine as that. He'd have been great.
Yeah. Okay, so now that you've discredited Randy Couture as an action star, do you still think he has what it takes to beat James Toney?
Absolutely.
If you wanted to pick James Toney, yeah.
Dang it.
Now you can't talk for the rest of the podcast. Because I was going to ask, because I know you like to pick the underdogs. If you were going to actually, like, pick James Toney, I would recommend you just, like, put $1,000 on it. Because if you truly believed he was going to win, you'd make a bazillion dollars back.
Well, actually,
sure
you'd just make like $3,500 bucks, but that's still a lot of money.
Yeah, you'd make some change.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Randy Couture, but I really don't care, you know, either way. Like, this really doesn't prove anything to me, you know? It's not about...
Yeah, are you saying they're not promoting it in its true light?
In its true sense, no, because if you are a boxing fan, you can still like mixed martial arts. I mean, it's not like an us versus them mentality. Like, you know, boxing is, you know, pretty much dead in the water. You know, they've got more history to it than anything. And
you have a few big fights every once in a while. Yeah,
that's what, like, I think a lot of sports fans really connect with is the history of their favorite sport. Like, not exactly where it is or where it's going, because they're always complaining about this new guy and that new guy and how it's never going to be the same as it was in 1920 when the real good stuff was happening. You know, that's how
they fought drunk in the ring.
Yeah.
And were racist.
There was 30-round fights. I wish I was there. Yeah, so I think that they're more connected to the history than...
I think this is why boxing fans hate MMA, is because people like us.
Why? What? I don't know. But then they're going to go like, oh, how about these great fights from the 70s, from the 60s, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And there's still great, very exciting boxing fighters out there that, you know, probably pay-per-view buys for boxing are more than UFC buys. Wouldn't you say? I don't know.
I think
I haven't really done the research.
The big fights, the mega fights in boxing still sell way better than the MMA fights, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. So it's not an us versus them thing.
Speaking of history of the sport, though, I just went and YouTubed today a old fight of Andrei Arlovsky in Russia against some drunk Russian guy who was supposedly a Muay Thai guy. His name was like Dat Sick or something. And throughout the course of this fight, Andrei's just...
Sick!
He's just whooping his ass, but then they get stood up at some point, and Dat Sick does this, like, forward roll, lunge kick to the face, and hits Arlovsky, like, dead on, and then just clocks him, and Arlovsky goes down.
Whoa!
But yeah, sweet fight.
It's awesome.
The specialized striking, man. Yeah, man. And Randy Couture, I mean, I think he knows exactly what this fight's about. He's,
Gosh, I hope so.
Well, yeah, and he's
I
like,
really
you
hope
know,
he doesn't get too much bravado and try to.
I'm going to knock him out standing.
Right, that's why I think Randy Couture, I mean, Randy Couture is like, you know, a legend in MMA, so it is kind of weird to have an 0-0 fighter, you know, come in to get debut against him. But at the same time, Randy Couture is kind of well known for his, like, master game planning and being very self aware and, you know, the humble fighter. You know, as he's been presented, you know, that sort of thing. So, and he's talked about it. He's like, I know I'm not like a boxer level, you know, striker. You know, I'm a mixed martial artist. So, you know, again, Randy Couture, he's going to take it. The world won't end if he loses. Boxing won't implode upon itself when James Toney loses.
And why the heck do like really popular boxing pay-per-views sell more than mixed martial arts?
What?
It doesn't seem as exciting.
Mexico.
Oh, well, if he can take that into account, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it just has a wider international market, yeah. I guess. That makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
I'm not a sociologist.
You're just a journalist with a heart of gold, Tobin.
Okay, that's getting weird again.
Come over here and hug me.
Stop it.
All right, what else is happening?
Damian Maya, Mario Miranda.
Huh.
I think.
Ooh.
Wasn't Damian Maya, like, just taking off another card? Because he was going to fight Alan Belcher?
It was going to be... Is Damian Maya was going to be Alan Belcher, and then Belcher pulled out because of injury?
Yeah, the right? eye injury, which he may never fight again. We don't know yet.
So, yeah, I want to... Yeah, double-check that, because sometimes the fight lineup online can be, you know, out of date. But no, it's Damian Maya, Mario Miranda. I don't know much about Mario Miranda, honestly. Damian Maya for, you know, the trouncing / dance-off he had and lost to Anderson Silva. I mean, he's still someone to be feared on the ground. Again, you know, clearly he's shown that he needs to work on his stand-up if he's going to be, you know, a well-rounded, consider, you know, a mixed martial artist. You know, he showed some decent stand-up prior to that. I mean,
yeah, against Dan Miller,
right? Against the level of Anderson Silva, again, not going to have good striking. But
yeah, well, there's not a whole lot of people who outstrike Anderson Silva. Basically, only Jael Sonnen does.
Yeah, he's Superman.
Superman. Oh. So where are we going with this? I'm gonna take Mario.
Because his name's Mario.
Yeah, then Damian Maya, you know, after
losing to the best fighter in the world, I don't think he can beat anybody.
No, but I would say that was probably a big ego bruise to him. Yeah,
you know, that couldn't have been a worse ego bruise than the one he had before that, where he lost in like 20 seconds to Nate Marquardt.
Yeah, getting punted by Nate Marquardt is pretty bad. But you know, looking at Mario Miranda's record, coming off a win over David Loazo, which would be really impressive if it was like 2000. Maybe, mm-hmm. But David Loazo has kind of been in and out of the UFC.
He was okay in 2005.
Right.
That was when he got his title shot, I think, in 2006. But yeah, he fell off the map for the last few years.
Yeah, but so win over David Loazo, lost to Gerald Harris. That was his only fights in the UFC so far.
I'm gonna go with Damian.
Yeah,
Damian Maya.
Again, I favor Damian Maya here.
By submission.
Fools.
Damian Maya by flying sidekick.
No.
Right? Yeah,
I'm gonna go with
submission.
Triangle.
Triangle. I like it.
Triangle choke.
I'm agreed with you there.
Just in case there was another triangle you were confused with.
Body triangle.
The dinner triangle. Ding ding. Get some, boys.
But yeah, again, I think, you know, Damian Maya, again, looked pretty terrible in his Anderson Silva loss, but it was to Anderson Silva, you know, for whatever you want to say about his dancing skills, Anderson Silva still, like...
He is a good dancer.
Yeah, and you know, he's a pretty decent fighter sometimes, too. So, I expect Damian Maya to take this. Marvin Miranda, I mean, again, he's 10-1, so he's not a slouch, but it just kind of... And again, I can't speak... You know, he might surprise us, but just from what I have not seen of him, because I haven't seen much... I don't expect a ton out of them. But,
okay. What else we got?
Let's see. Nate Diaz, Marcus Davis.
Oh, sweet. I like that fight.
Yeah.
That's going to be pretty cool.
Nate Diaz should win that fight, I would think. It's kind of my cursory or, you know, first thoughts on that. I mean, Marcus Davis, we all know, he hits hard.
He's a good boxer.
Yeah. But Nate Diaz has got a pretty wicked ground game.
Yeah, I think this is the fight where Nate Diaz is the more well-rounded of the two,
mm-hmm.
but Marcus Davis is better at what Nate likes to do.
How have we not, like, does Nate Diaz have a Twitter page or account? Because one would really think that, you know, Nate Diaz is pretty good at talking garbage, it seems, or at least infuriating his opponents, and I haven't heard anything about Marcus Davis wishing him death by AIDS yet, and, like, the fight's less than a week away.
Yeah, well, that's because Nate didn't say anything about Marcus's heritage. And that's really what gets under his skin, calling him a phony Irishman.
Also, might have been scolded a little bit for wishing death upon an opponent. By AIDS.
I don't really like either one of these guys. Could just something just happen, like the earth, like, open up and swallow them both?
There could be a double KO.
All right, I hope for that.
That's always fun. Happened to Gray Maynard once. Well, kind of.
It's always fun to see the double KO. I don't think we've seen a good one in the UFC for a while.
Yeah, no.
Not that I can recall. But, you know, Nate Diaz coming over, win off over Rory Markham. Before that, he had the loss to Gray Maynard, the split decision. But, I mean, Nate Diaz has been kind of, like, really...
he's always been pretty spotty.
Right, yeah. You know, he wins against, you know, guys. It seems anytime he takes up a step in competition, he comes back down.
Yeah. He's not... Well, he's got his level that he's good at. Mm-hmm. He's not his brother, but he's good.
Yeah.
But Nick's better.
And he's bounced around weight classes, isn't that right?
Well, he hasn't really bounced around. He just moved up recently.
Okay. Right, because before he was fighting...
Yeah, he's spent his whole career at 155, but he just, before his most recent fight, he moved up to 170 and said, I'm not getting paid enough to make this weight cut, because he likes to eat a lot, because he's really high, and, you know, it's hard to cut weight when you're smoking a lot of pot.
I'd give you crap for baseless accusations, but they totally smoke a lot of pot.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Like, that's documented.
I just bring it up because it's funny to see the look on your face when I say stuff like that.
No, but that was
it's
legit.
True.
No, like, yeah, the Diaz brother, I mean, Nick Diaz, like, skipped out on he was like, I had an agreement with the California State Athletic Commission that I could totally smoke pot.
Yeah. Well, and then,
that's
like,
why I'm not taking this drug test.
He was bragging about how he can beat any drug test in 8 days, yeah. And then they give him a random. He's like, hey!
Whoa, I said 8 days!
These are their cowboys. But yeah, the Diaz brothers, like, you know, that's not a baseless steroid accusation. They totally smoke pot.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nate Diaz, I think, is one of those guys. I mean, the weight cut changing weight class doesn't necessarily solve everything, but...
Solves that problem.
Certain fighters, like, when they fight, I get scared. I'm like, that guy's going to break in half because he's so skinny. So, yeah, if Nate Diaz doesn't need to cut as much weight, you know, maybe he'll, you know, and he's kind of tallish, yeah, to begin with, so.
Yeah, so he can peck on a few more pork rinds.
Get a bit more meat on his bones. But, yeah, I expect him to get a submission win over Marcus Davis. And Diaz brothers, they take punches well.
They do take punches well. And it also doesn't help Davis's side that he got brutally knocked out, and was it his last fight, or has he had a fight since then?
I think he's had a fight since then, but yeah, he got...
Destroyed!
Yeah, by Killabee Ben Saunders, who, you know, has some wicked knees in the clinch, which...
But Marcus is safe now, because Ben is out of the UFC.
No, that's right. Him and his sweet sideburns. Oh, well. Yeah, no, Davis coming off a win over Jonathan Goulet.
Okay, but that's not saying a whole lot.
Yeah.
Because Goulet kind of sucks. But he does have that cool hair where he, like, dyes a sponsor's name into it.
It's true. And he's got, his nickname was the Road Warrior. So.
Well, that's not that cool.
What? How dare you, sir?
It's kind of cool, Greg.
Just because Mel Gibson's fallen on hard times / gone crazy recently doesn't mean the Road Warrior wasn't awesome.
Hey, he deserves to be... never mind. He deserves to be blanked before the hot tub. So anyways.
So you watch a lot of Jersey Shore and listen to Mel Gibson...
Yeah,
I gotta do something,
tapes, huh?
Man. It's a boring world out there. What do you want from me?
you want to go with Marcus Davis? Oh, no, you wish they would be swallowed
by the
game.
I don't like
game,
both. I don't like either one of them.
Yeah, okay.
I'll just be...
So Gabe Rudiger made it back in the UFC, huh?
Apparently.
Isn't he the guy who, like, cried because he couldn't make weight on the Ultimate Fighter 5?
I'd cry on the Ultimate Fighter if it would bring in ratings.
Well, yeah, but he was crying because he was like, I weigh too much. I'm not going to be able to make 155. And then BJ Penn was like, sounds like a problem that a, you know, girl would have.
I'm going to be honest. I was not watching The Ultimate Fighter back then.
Oh, okay.
I kind of fallen off the wagon a little bit.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Fat
men,
bastard.
Men crying is hilarious.
Especially over being fat.
Yeah. But, yeah, Gabe Rudiger taking on another guy with a terrible nickname, Joe Lozon. J-Low.
It's J-Lo. It's Lozon, man.
But I don't want to call him J-Lo. I really don't.
Jenny from the block.
But he's coming off, Lozon's coming off a loss to Sam Stout, and that was his first fight back after, he was basically gone for like about a year almost.
Yeah, he'd been playing a lot of Xbox.
I think he had an injury, but yes.
Well, what do you think he's been doing in that time?
Eating In-N-Out Burger and playing Xbox?
Heck yeah, Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Represent. Yeah, I'm terrible at Call of Duty. I hate those games. But
yeah.
I guess the fighters like it, so it's cool.
They hate you too, homo.
Sorry,
so someone
I have
who would
actual
play
friends
game.
Who served overseas, so playing realistic modern war games kind of makes me uncomfortable. I apologize that my friend got shot hit with a grenade.
Is he okay?
Yeah, he's fine.
All right.
Now. Well, he's not dead.
Yay.
Sorry to bring it down and crap on the Call of Duty parade.
Whatever, dude.
I want to shoot aliens. I don't want to shoot real people.
They're bad guys.
Jeez Louise. Don't call Tobin a homo. He's going to talk about his friend who took a grenade for this country.
I don't want to feed the modern war machine, okay?
Why don't you represent yourself, huh? Instead of dragging your buddy into it draped in an American flag.
I didn't say his name.
So what were we doing?
We were talking about Joe Lozon, I think.
I think we were talking about why I hate the troops. Is that...
So, yeah, I expect him to win. Who is he fighting again? Oh, yeah, Gabe Rudiger. He sucks and can't make weight. So this fight may not even happen.
That would be... I think Gabe Rudiger would have to miss weight by a lot for it to not happen. I mean,
well, I mean, it's always up to the fighter who makes weight.
But yeah, I expect Lozon to win this. Again, not take anything away from Sam Stout, but Lozon was coming off a year, basically about a year away from the cage. So, you know, I would imagine he's going to tighten things up. You know, ring rest, probably not a factor in this fight. And, you know, he's got extra motivation coming off of a loss that I think most people predicted he would win. I think he might get a finish.
Yeah, I think so. This seems like the kind of thing he would get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gabe Rudiger's nickname is Godzilla, really?
More like Godzuki.
Wow.
Hold on, what's a food that starts with a Z? Zucchini? No, that's too healthy.
Zebra cakes.
Got zebra cakes.
Good one, Matt. I think if this was an MMA web forum, we'd be banned for fighter bashing.
What? They do that?
Some of them do, yeah. But only the crappy ones. Nothing like StoneColdBillyRay.com where you can get all the fighter bashing you want.
Let them have it, Internet.
Might as well just post crap about fighters on your Facebook page at that point. So, Gabe Rudiger, back in the UFC.
Back.
When I say back, I mean, did he ever fight in the UFC, or was he just... Okay, no, he was on... he fought once officially in the UFC, UFC 63, lost to Melvin Gillard.
By a punch to the body.
Those hurt.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Those hurt a lot. But yep. His most recent fight was a win over Lenny Lovato.
Yay.
TKO punches at TPF 5. I don't know what that is. Stars and Strikes. Oh, clever. You would think they held it close to July 4th, but not quite. It was July 9th.
You know, it's the same week, maybe.
Could have been.
Okay, TPF is not as bad as I thought it would be. It's the Tachi Palace fights, which actually is a pretty legit, decent...
In Vegas?
California, local California promotion. But Stars and Strikes, that's not good.
That's no good. But you know what? Whatever.
But, you know, he's coming off a pretty decent win streak. Looks like a 5-6 win streak dating back to August 2008. But, yeah, I still expect Joe Lozon to beat him up.
Yeah. And I think so, too. But, you know, afterwards he can go home, grab himself a nice big old slice of cheesecake,
cry himself to sleep while watching How I Met Your Mother.
Doesn't make Way Home the Ultimate Fighter dead to you forever, huh, Greg?
It's the ultimate sin in combat sports is to not make weight. Which, by the way, going back to that strike force, KJ Noon's missed weight.
Yeah, but George Grizel, ever the sportsman... Like, George Grizel must have really wanted to get beat up.
He loves it.
Like, he was like, you miss weight, it's cool, dude. And, like, you know, I don't want to make fun of George Grizel because, like, he's a... Yeah, you know, I've heard interviews with him. I mean, he's very sporting and all that, but I mean, like, he was totally cool with him missing weight. It was like a quarter pound, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't much.
And then he was like, yeah, I don't think he's a dirty fighter. There's the late hits, but blah, 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 blah. But I don't even think we got into the mentality of George Grizel having just, like, totally being content with just getting punched in the face repeatedly. Like, I don't know what goes into that. But, yeah, so missing weight, not great, unless your opponent's cool with it.
Yeah.
But, I think important to mention that Joe Lozon and Gabe Rudiger both got a pretty extensive list of victories by submission, I believe. So maybe we'll see this fight finish on the ground.
Perhaps.
And I
wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah. So, but I'm comfortable. Yeah, Joe
it's also possible, though, that he'll get finished standing up. Maybe even by decision.
That's a 33% chance of one of those things happening?
Well, I'd say it's a 100% chance of one of those things happening.
I'm bad at math. Whatever. Fractions are hard.
What's the variable?
That clearly wouldn't factor into this.
Andre,
I don't know. Matt, like Matt said, maybe the Earth could open up and swallow both these men whole.
I have a hard time picking against a guy named Winner. You know, so I'm going to go with Andre over Nick Lentz.
Yeah, moving on to the undercard, Andre Winner. Yeah. Is he another Ultimate Fighter alum?
Yes, he is the Season 9 runner-up at lightweight and has been very impressive in his fights since then.
And like you mentioned, his last name is Winner.
Yeah. He knocked the crap out of that guy, really, whatever the hell his last name is.
Delgado.
Yeah. That. He knocked the crap out of that guy. He like punched him across the ring or the cage and then like chased him and hit him some more.
So you're still not going to root for him after all that?
Well, the ref didn't stop it yet, so he had to.
But yeah, that was that knockout came at UFC 105. Since then, he took a win over Rafael Oliveira at UFC Fight Night 21 in March?
Something like that, yeah.
It's getting so late into the year that when I see dates, I have to count back and be like, okay, what month is that? Because I'm just not good at those things.
Okay, well, if you ever need help, I'm here for you. I'm like an internal calendar
don't
there.
Don't look at me, dude.
I'll just get
I'm
my iPhone out or whatever. Oh, I don't have one. Never mind.
Oh, that sucks.
Mm. Yeah. But
Nick Lentz, I don't know who he is, so he'll lose. That's usually how it goes for guys like that.
Unless it's Bobby Lashley versus Chad Griggs.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, his nickname's the Carney.
I have heard of him. I can't tell you who he's fought recently, but looking at his record, coming off a win over Robert Emerson, UFC Fight Night 21 decision. Fought to a draw with Thiago Tavares.
That's interesting.
At the previous fight night.
Well, looks like he's got quite a win streak going
on. Also beat Rafael Oliveira. So MMA math means these guys will fight to a draw.
He won that fight by decision while Winner knocked him out.
So Winner won better.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Put this into my
Winner is good at winning.
You got to back a winner.
Do we think there's going to be bad Mike Goldberg puns?
It's going to be great, Mike.
No, but I think he will talk about the meteoric rise of Winner. Because it is pretty meteoric.
A winner!
And judging by the skin tone of Winner, I'm really not sure how he's going to, talk about how explosive and athletic he is. He might be like explosive but not athletic.
Maybe it's like a fine day for a white winner. Wow.
Well, I find that one unlikely, Matt.
Yikes. So, also on the undercard, Dan Miller, John Salter.
That's cool.
I like Dan Miller in that fight.
Yeah, I think so. They've finally given him somebody he can beat.
He's been on tough times recently, both in and out of the ring, it sounds like.
Yeah, but, he's also fought some pretty tough dudes.
Yeah, I mean, his last three fights, he's all lost, but those are against good top-tier competition, coming off of starting back with Chael Sonnen last year, May of last year, then the loss to Damian Maia, and then most recently the loss to Michael Bisping. So, and those are all solid fighters.
Yeah, there's no shame in losing any of those fights, and there was some talk about him getting cut, and I was like, I don't think he's gonna, and he didn't.
Right.
So I was right.
And he's taking on John Salter, who is 5-1. It looks like last win coming over over Jason McDonald.
Ooh,
TKO leg injury.
Oh, that was the one. This is the guy who was there. His leg got gnarled up. I guess it broke in like two places.
Ew.
Yeah.
But before that, he took a loss to Gerald Harris. And those were his only UFC fights.
He beat Roberto Treven.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And some people might recognize the name James Hammertree from...
He was on this most recent season of The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, and, John Salter beat him up.
Cool.
So,
Yeah, Roberto Treven. I haven't heard that name in a long time. That's a guy that Frank Mir broke his arm, in 2002.
Well, he still fights for, he still makes the adrenaline MMA cards.
And apparently went down a couple of weight classes.
Maybe it's a different guy. Who knows?
Yeah, probably. It's probably not the most uncommon of names in Brazil or, wherever.
Wherever he's from. But, I like Dan Miller in this fight.
I think so, yeah.
You mentioned the talk of him being cut after his loss to Michael Bisping. If he did manage to lose this fight, I think, that would be
That would be the nail in the coffin right there.
So we'll see. Other than that, I mean, that's basically the whole card. We have Nico Sirpsak versus Greg Soto and Mike Pierce versus Amilcar Alves. And,
I don't have a whole lot to say about either of them.
And you probably won't see them.
No, well, you might see the Upshipcheck fight.
It's a possibility.
But, he's been exciting sometimes in the past.
Yeah.
Got a real nice head kick over some guy on the Ultimate Fighter, I believe it was Mark the Meat Missile Miller or something like that.
That's a porn name. That's terrible.
He says that he came up with that name because he was telling his grandma that he was a fighter, and she asked him what his nickname was, and that was what popped into his head.
Change it. You can change your nickname.
Hey, Grandma, they call me the Meat Missile.
Oh, my. Yeah. Okay, so that
was... I bet she was proud of him.
Yeah.
We went over, we picked the fights, but let's get to the important... the most important part of this card. How many fighters are going to come out to the song I'm shipping up to Boston?
Huh?
It's the first... At UFC's first fight card in Boston.
Boston? And who sings Shipping Up to Boston?
Dropkick Murphys?
Oh. Is that a song from Departed?
And first of all, too many fighters use that song in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't... Yeah, it was around before The Departed, but that was like the one that really got a lot of people's attention and featured in the film The Departed.
Well, I bet Marcus Davis will.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, like, I think Marcus Davis comes out of that song half the time anyways. But I wouldn't be surprised to hear that song more than once on the fight card.
I mean, great. You know, I like Dropkick Murphys.
Yeah. But it's fun to make fun of them when they get overused.
Well, then they're just not as punk rock anymore.
Especially when they're just pandering, when it's just pandering to the, hey, we're in Boston, let's play this Dropkick Murphys song.
I know, there's other Boston, you know, like, I'm sure that the Boondock Saints had a bunch of songs in it. Right? The Brood?
They sold like a dozen albums.
That was awesome. I love that part.
Yeah, I'm sure state radio is going to get a lot of play. And
that's true. Yeah. Tobin and I have seen this documentary about the guy that did the Boondock Saints. Nobody else gets this right now.
State radio is a different band, but yeah. No, The Brood, I don't think we're going to hear from them.
No.
And state radio is the indie college scene, I believe, so I don't think we're going to hear from them on the...
So we're going to hear a lot of Shipping Up to Boston. I would say... Who really has potential to come out to that? I would say Winner does, Marcus Davis, and probably Gray Maynard. So I'm going to say three times.
Okay, I'm with you on the Gray Maynard tip. I think he might come out to Shipping Up to Boston. Oh, man, Kenny Florian might come out to it, though.
Oh, wouldn't it be great if they both came out to the same song?
what if everyone just came out to Shipping Up to Boston?
That's it. That's all the... It's playing on an infinite loop. Even Randy Couture comes out to it.
Yeah. I mean, Dana White's probably going to come out because it's freaking in Boston. He'll probably come out, you know, to I'm Shipping Out to Boston.
So. Yeah.
Who knows? But I just got a feeling we're going to hear that song more than once.
You just got a feeling... it looks like a good card, though. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Gonna come over this time?
What?
Gonna come over this time?
Oh, why do you always put me on the spot on the podcast? Well, I don't know.
I'll be there, Matt.
I know. I know you won't, Tobin. It's okay.
Whoa. Don't get all sad and cry.
I'm not gonna make way. No!
I'm just not. I'm not a long-term planner. I literally don't know. Don't take
it personally.
No plans.
I like your stuff.
You're a wonderful human being. Don't cry.
Thank you. Am I compassionate? Call me compassionate. And thank you for listening to the audio choke here at MMATorch.com. We appreciate having you here. Leave a comment. Go to the forum. Start up a conversation. Of course, audio choke at Twitter and Facebook.com. Find us, friend us, and figure out all the things happening audio choke related. Until next time.
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. See you then.
Audio choke.
I'm winded. I need some O2 in a can.